Hi, my name is Ronnie Horn, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Dustin and Kobe, have a list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Blaine N. will read the preamble.
My name is Blaine, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Cynthia M. will read the steps.
Hi, everybody. My name is Cynthia, and I'm an alcoholic. The steps, one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And Eric T. will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Chris H.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really excited to be here tonight. I'm really excited to be sober and to be alive and to be cognizant and aware of what's going on in my life and in the lives of the people around me. And AA has been really, really good to me. The amount that I've gotten back out of AA versus the amount that I've given is not equal. You know, if I got what I deserved, I wouldn't be standing here tonight with you guys. And I want to thank you all for helping me to stay sober one day at a time. And so I come from a multicultural background. My father is Costa Rican and my mother is an Irish American. And so there was a lot of confusion early on with me in terms of, like, you know, who I was and where I fit in. And when I was 10 years old, my father moved us to Costa Rica, and we lived there for a little while, and it was a really, you know, traumatic experience for me. I was entrenched in this new culture, and I didn't even speak Spanish, and things got really ugly there. Like, it was a really abusive environment, and it was a very painful childhood. And I swore I would never drink because my grandfather was an alcoholic in recovery before he died, and so I was forewarned about alcoholism in my family, and I took that warning seriously. I would make fun of people that drank and that, like, the stoners in school. Like, that's how I handled that. When I was 19, my friends from work took me out for drinks because I was, like, the goody-goody. You know, I had my first experience with alcohol, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know what I mean? At that time. And I was like, I can't believe I've been missing out on this for so long. Because it enabled me to be anybody that I wanted to be, and it made me wild, it made me cool, it made me attractive, and I loved it. And I started to drink alcoholically almost instantaneously. It's really, really scary the way that I used those resentments and used all that, like, anger that I had from, you know, because I thought that, you know, what they did to me was so terrible that I almost destroyed myself, you know, in a very, like, very, very fast. The kind of drinker that I was I would go up to the bar and order a Kettle One on the Rocks and think that I was cool. I was a big martini vodka drinker, and I would make fun of people that drank, like, Malibu rum or something, you know, because I was, like, I wanted, like, hair on my chest kind of drinker. And I did a lot of damage. I liked to drink and drive. Drinking and driving was my thing. I got a charge out of it. And I did. I think because I was, like, borderline suicidal, but I didn't have the courage to take my own life. So I would handle that by getting behind the wheel, you know, totally wasted. And I had a DWI when I was 19. I moved. I lived in Texas at the time, right before that, and we moved to New Jersey, right? Like, and I thought that in New Jersey things would be better. I don't know what I was thinking. But because I knew that there was something wrong with me, but I didn't know that I had alcoholism. And so I had only lived here briefly, and I got into this terrible car accident. I ran off the side of the road in my brand new Blazer, and the wire came through the windshield, and they said if I didn't have my seatbelt on, I would have been decapitated on the spot. But for some reason, I had my seatbelt on, and then I was belligerent towards the cops. I was trying to, like, escape the scene of the accident, and they had me at gunpoint. And I woke up in the hospital not remembering what had happened. You know, it was like, okay, you had a car accident. And I didn't understand the consequences of what had happened. I want to talk about my family. I remember the first time that I wet the bed. And my mother, I was at home and my mother freaked out and she was like, oh my God, you wet the bed, you wet the bed. And she started crying hysterically and I was like, whatever. Like, what's the big deal? Like, I wet the bed, you know? And I can't even imagine the pain that she must have felt at that time growing up with an alcoholic in her family, you know, and having to see that happening, like knowing that this is happening in her son's life. And I'm really grateful that in AA I've been able to, you know, straighten out my life a little bit and know that my mother can rest at night and that my mother's proud of me today. My bottom was just like any other night. I was drinking and driving as usual. And I don't even know where I was going. I was a big blackout drinker. And I woke up on the side of the New Jersey Turnpike and I ran from my car because I didn't want to get arrested. I knew that it would be my second DWI. So there I was running down the side of the New Jersey Turnpike, and it was an icy cold December night, and this woman picked me up on the side of the road, and it was like 4 a.m, and she allowed me to use her cell phone to call my roommate and come and pick me up. And the next morning I had to go to the cops and explain what had happened, and I didn't even know what really happened, and I had that sense of impending doom, you know, and I thought that it was all over, and I got away without any consequences. And I think that what happened that night was that I noticed a kindness, and it had a profound effect on me, because I think people had been kind to me throughout my life, but I just was too self-centered to ever be aware of it. But for some reason, I couldn't get over the fact that this total stranger picked me up on the side of the road and saved me. And that morning, before I went to the cops, I drank the Malibu rum that was in the house, and it didn't work. And I had that moment where I was looking in the mirror, and it was like, what happened? And so I came to AA. My best friend, running buddy, had gotten sober like 7 days before, and I thought he was crazy. And he said, well, it sounds like your life is unmanageable, you know, and I called him to tell him what had happened to me, and I was like, yeah, unmanageable, you're good. And I went to a meeting with him, and, you know, that was the beginning of my experience in AA. And, my sobriety date is December 23rd of 2003. And, the next day, my mother invited me to go to midnight mass. And I'm not religious, and I don't pretend to be, but, I was in the shower. I said I wouldn't go, but I was in the shower, and I heard this, like, voice, and it was like, go. I had one day sober, and, I went there, and, I got there late, and the sermon was, they were talking about the book of John, and they turned all the lights off in the church, and they lit the candles, and it was the most beautiful thing that I ever saw. And it was like a homecoming for me. Like, I knew that I was back. I knew that it was going to be okay. And the woman said that no matter how afraid you are, no matter how bad things may seem, it's going to be okay. And I would light candles during my early sobriety in the spirit of that message, you know, because I didn't think that I'd be able to put 30 days together. And I was really scared that I was going to get struck drunk. And I knew that I was going to die. Like, I came to that time where I knew it was over. And I didn't even really want to live, because the only thing that I had to live for was alcohol. So it was a very, like, painful time for me getting sober. And if you're new, I just want to tell you that there's hope, you know, and that we believe that this program can work for you. And that's why we're all here tonight. And I can tell you that I definitely believe that it works, and I've seen it. And I feel it every day, and I love AA. I was gonna get a job as a receptionist, when I was new in sobriety, and, you know, everything that I have is as a direct result of the people in AA and the principles of AA. And, some guy said, well, why don't you try going back to school, you know? And, I had been at Rutgers, and I failed out miserably, and, I was like, no, you know, school's not for me. I don't think I could do it. And I ended up going back and begging my way back in, and I did really well. And like, today I'm at Columbia University, and it's like crazy things that are totally beyond my wildest dreams that I never ever would have envisioned for myself. But more than the superficial stuff, it's the feeling that I am useful, you know, that I actually can bring something to the table. Like, my life today is like, what am I going to pack into the stream of this? How can I make the situation better? How can I be of service to you and to my family? And to know that my family can count on me and depend on me, you know, and to know that I'm that guy is like, it blows me out of the water. My father is my biggest resentment by far. And when I was newly sober, I got sober in a clubhouse in New Jersey, Friendship Hall in Piscataway, New Jersey. So if any of you know it or have been there, that place saved my life. And I would go there 2 times a day, you know, in early sobriety. And, this woman pointed out that part in the Big Book where it said, you know, you got to start praying for the people that you have resentments against or it's going to kill you. And I knew that that resentment would kill me. So I started praying for him. And it's been a really long process. And I can't honestly say from the podium that I've forgiven my father completely. But I can tell you that I heard this song, and it was in November, and I discovered that there's this deep underlying love that I have for my father, you know, in spite of everything that happened, and that I'm able to say, like, I love you for giving me my life, you know, I love you for being my father, and I'm grateful to him, and I was able to say that to him over Christmas break, and that's like a miracle. And I do. I love my father in spite of everything because I'm able to see him today as a sick person. You know, I know that what happened in the past wasn't necessarily his fault, and I'm no longer a victim of the bondage of the past. You know, I was a victim of the bondage of the past and of the bondage of self. And today, today I'm free. You know, it's my life, and God is with me every day. Like, I'm able to do pretty much anything that I set my mind to doing, and because I have God in my life, and because I have like thousands of people that are standing behind me and like cheering me on, and like, yeah, you can do it, because I mean, most of the time I don't believe in myself, but I know you guys believe in me, and I know that I believe in you, and that's what gets me through. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Nancy S.
Good evening. Hi, my name is Nancy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of Atlantic Group, and my sponsor is Patty, and my sobriety date is August 22nd, 2005. I'm very grateful to be here to share my experience and strength and hope. I'm from small town rural America, from an alcoholic, untreated alcoholic household, and there was lots of fighting and lots of love and lots of abuse. My parents used to laugh and tell a story that when I was a baby, a sober church lady came to the door one day unexpectedly, and my father kept her busy in the hall while my mother went over and picked me up and took away the liquor bottles I was playing with. That's what it was like. As a child, I liked to take gulps of my father's ale, and I liked his whiskey, but I really hated the smell it left on his breath. And when I got to be in my 20s and my 30s, I often said, I never met a drink I didn't like. But that's a lie, because I didn't drink rye. I hated that smell. In school, I was all over the place. On Friday night and Saturday night, I partied with the partying crowd, and on the weekdays, I hung out with the studious crowd, and on Sunday, I sang in the church choir. But at first, those weekends, I'd get seriously sick from drinking, but very soon, I realized I had a capacity for it, and that made me feel very grown up. But I wasn't... I wasn't feeling really right. So like many people probably in here, I checked with a psychologist to see what's wrong. And right away he said, well, do you drink much? And I told him, I really believed it. No, I don't drink much. Because what my parents did, that was drinking. I was just hanging out with the kids. I was just doing the thing we all did. So in the meantime, I hated disappointing people, and I wanted to help, but I didn't know how. And the problem started to be really always out there. It was never in here. It's just like, there's some problem out there. And I'd like to help, but I can't. And, you know, that's how it went. So I made my first geographic in high school. I took the family car, and I drove as far as I could. I just drove, kept driving and driving and driving. I finally ran out of gas. I found my way home. So when people used to come to me and ask me to help them crash a party or have a good time, I was like, why me? You know, I just really thought... And this is in the book, you know, I really wanted to be just in a dark room. I could be happy alone. But I continued to party, and I had a lot of close calls. I came out in a blackout in a date rape situation, and I ran away with a guy to Australia. He turned out to be an ex-con. I blacked out while driving, and my two-year-old was strapped in the back seat. So, you know, I was lucky. I met my husband in a bar. The first time we met, he got right down on his knee and he proposed, "Will you live with me?" And I knew that was the guy for me, you know. I followed him right down to New York a month later. That was it, you know. Yeah, sure. My career was in advertising, and that was great for me because in the 70s and 80s, I was a real heyday, and I got to drink at lunch, and I got to drink at dinner after work. It was wonderful. We had great times. But my capacity started to change, and I really started to notice that when I fell asleep face first in the soup bowl out at a fancy restaurant one night. So I knew something was up, but I can skip the ups and downs. I mean, I'm pretty old up here. I came in very late, so you can imagine the ups and downs. I did all the things about, you know, not being able to keep scotch in the house. I switched to wine and couldn't keep up with the wine, and people would send us invitations for dinner, and I would send them cases of wine. They thought I was very generous. I think that's what they thought. But now I'm beginning, you know, maybe they were on to something, but I still wasn't on to it, you know. I couldn't keep it in my house, but maybe I could keep it in theirs. So when I came to visit, right? So in the meantime, I started to hide my glass, and that's when I think my resentments to my husband really took off. I really made my husband the problem. I never made me the problem, and I'm amazed that he stuck by me all these years because I had a perpetual decree in my house that if he would change, things would be great. If I could divorce you, this would be great. You know, come on, let's quit this. You know, I'm tired of this too, and I can't get over he stayed by me. Because eventually my kids would start saying, you know, why are you so angry? You know, you're just angry all the time, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, you know, don't they know that it's their father? It's their father. So what happened? How did I get in here? Because this place really, I came in here and it saved my life. It really did. I had a very close call a year ago. This is a killer disease. I was in the hospital, had my pancreas out, my spleen out. That's after I came in. I had no idea that my insides were dying. And they were, and I'm here to thank God I was in AA and had already started some recovery, and maybe that's the little bit that saved me. But I came because I had been praying that I could learn to listen better. And I was doing that one night. That was my effort. I was trying to pray to listen better. Maybe this would somehow help. And a friend called and said she was in trouble, that she thought she maybe had trouble with alcohol, and someone had suggested she go to AA. So I said, well, you know, great, because I knew this woman had a lot of trouble. She was really in it. She was her problem, and I wanted to help her. I had helped her off and on for years. I wanted to get this done. She needed help. I would go to any lengths to help her. So I went with her to an AA meeting, and while I was there, someone said that they couldn't have just one drink, and it was like through a fog, but I knew what that meant. It wasn't, you know, I knew what it meant, kind of. So I kept going with her. I didn't drink for her for 2 months. And until one night we were going on my husband and I were out and we were driving, and he got two speeding tickets within 10 minutes. And when he got that second speeding ticket, I thought, uh-oh, there's going to be hell to pay tonight. And I could just picture in my mind, it was like that in the book where it says put the whiskey in the milk, just as fast as that, I pictured the drink I was going to have that night. When I got that drink, I took one sip and I was so off to the races. I raved up and down a resort town up in Vermont for an hour. It was crazy, and I thought I was losing my mind. So I didn't drink again for another 2 months, but I went to a party and I said, Nick, I'm afraid I'm going to drink tonight. And he said, well, go late and have only red wine. So I thought that was okay, because I thought I would drink that night. So I got there and I had one glass of red wine, and I didn't get drunk, but I couldn't leave. I couldn't seem to leave that party. When the host and hostess said, well, we're going to bed now, I had to go home. But I couldn't drink, I couldn't go home, and the next morning when my husband came down, I snapped at him, and I was like, whoa. I apologized quickly, and I said, I know you did nothing. I think I've got a problem with alcohol. I've got to go to AA. And so I did. And that's how I came in here. And how is it? I came in here, I tried some different groups first, and I came in here and I asked Patty that the first night if she'd sponsor me, or actually my friend asked, and it was a big deal when she did. It was a big relief when she said, she turned around, I can remember it very well, when she turned around and said yes, it was a huge relief for me. So what's it like now for me? I'm a little less reactive at home, and here we say it's progress, not perfection, and for me, I really have to take it slow. I have to take it slow. I have to slow it down. I have to take baby steps. I really can't expect too much from myself. Early on, I told Patty I didn't think I could make a meeting right away because I thought my husband wouldn't like it, and she said, you know, it's not like you're going to Bombay or someplace, Nancy, you know. And that's been very useful to me because I really, it's hard. So I have to keep calling my sponsor. She gets me to meetings. I need to get to meetings. I get more reactive the less I go. It's a miracle of sorts that I am here. As I said, I was sick. It's a miracle that this year I asked my husband to go out with me and celebrate Valentine's Day, and we did. It's the first time in years. I thank God for my sober sisters. I read the book because my sponsor comes here at 5:30 to help all my sponsors, my sober sisters and myself read it. And I'm really grateful for the commitments, which I stumbled all over hanging the banners. I thought, oh, this is a piece of cake. Big deal, I'm going to hang the banners. I stumbled all over that. I feel it's an honor. I'm so grateful now. Now I'm trying to get used to working with Levi, and I'll save you the water, Levi. I've got water here for you. I'm trying to get used to it over there, just learning what to do in case, you know, not all of us is there one night. I'm really grateful to be here, and I just say keep coming back, everybody. Please keep coming back.